Coming up on the Joyful Learning Pod.
After writing many middle grade novels, I'm the kind of person who I don't get bored, but I like to experiment because I don't want to tell the same story over and over or do something in the same way because I don't want to be bored and I don't want my readers to be bored.
So I would love to welcome Jamie Sumner to the Joyful Learning Podcast after about a year hiatus. It's been about a year since we've had an episode, and I'm so grateful that Jamie said yes to my invitation about 4 days ago. I feel like this was a very fast, fast thing. So hi, Jamie.
Hello. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be like the person ringing the bell to start it again.
Well, I don't think we could have found a better person. If those of you who are listening do not know the name Jamie Sumner, you have got to write this down and get to know her. She's amazing. She is the author of, I think now, 7 middle grades, and you can correct me, but I think I counted.
That was right. So, yeah, this is my 7th.
Awesome. So the first book that I hope a lot of you are familiar with is Roll With It. And then the sequel, Time to Roll. And the forthcoming third book, and sadly, I think the last, is Rolling On. That'll come out later next year, I think.
Next fall, this coming fall, yeah.
October.
2024 fall.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then she also has a bunch of different middle grade novels, Tune It Out, One Kid's Trash, The Summer of June, Made for It, and the newest, which was just released and had its book birthday in the last week. It's called Deep Water, and that's what we're going to really talk a lot about today. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other publications, and actually you can find a lot of her articles on her website, which we will share in the show notes, so you can check some of those articles out if you are interested. She loves stories that celebrate the grit and beauty in all kids, and she is also the mother of a son with cerebral palsy, and has written extensively about parenting a child with special needs. She and her family live in Nashville, Tennessee, and you can visit her at jamie-sumner.com, and we'll put that in the show notes as well. So welcome again, Jamie. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about Deep Water. I saw in a recent post on the, I think it's called, is it Love Middle Grade Facebook page? I love that page.
What is it called? For the Love of Middle Grade. Isn't that what it's called?
I think that's what it is. And I will find the link and I'll put it into the show notes.
That's a great group.
Oh my gosh. It's newer. Kind of when Twitter also X now, I guess, like kind of went a little astray. A lot of us educators, librarians, authors, that's where we went. And that is where I get all of my middle grade stuff, like all my information, updates, book parties, book launches. So I found out, though, very exciting, Deep Water was just named in the May and June Indie Next Pick list, which is exciting. So just tell us a little bit about this book. Give us a synopsis. And it's your first novel in verse, correct?
It is. And I am so excited because I was a debut author with Roll With It, obviously, because it was my first middle grade. But I get to be a debut author again in a way because a book in verse is a totally different animal. And it has been so fun. So verse, I think, verse was my first love, like as a kid writing. I think kids naturally gravitate towards poetry because they love music and lyrics. And also because it's less intimidating than like, I'm going to sit down and write a first chapter of a book or an entire short story. Poetry is like kind of fast, like it happens quickly, and it often deals with images, like vivid snapshots of things, and so it's less intimidating to write. And after writing many middle grade novels, I'm the kind of person who I don't get bored, but I like to experiment because I don't want to tell the same story over and over or do something in the same way. Because I don't want to be bored and I don't want my readers to be bored. And so I had started reading more middle grade books in verse and just fell in love. like the idea that you can look at the page and it looks totally different to the reader. And kids who may not be strong readers or they don't think they like to read, books in verse are so much more approachable, at least in my opinion, they are. And so Deep Water, basically, it's the story of Tully. Tully Burch is her name. She's 12. And the whole novel takes place over 6 hours. The book is split up into 6 hours. And each hour is her basically journey across Lake Tahoe swimming because she's trying to break the record for the youngest open water marathon swimmer to do the Godfather swim across Lake Tahoe. And it starts off real fast. Like she's on the edge of the shore. They count down. Her best friend Arch is there as her support crew and she's in the water. And you find out through the course of the novel kind of why she's doing this through flashbacks and kind of her emotional journey, which is essentially her mother has just in the past 6 months left the family, left her and her dad because she's in a pretty serious mental health crisis. She has depression and she's quit her medication and she has left. She's peaced out. And Tully thinks, if I can do this swim, if I can do something big enough to get her attention, because her mom was her swim coach and they were going to do the swim together, if I can do this, she'll come back. And you kind of watch as Tully struggles to process her mom's absence while also wanting to win her back, but wondering if this is going to be enough or can she do it? And what happens if she doesn't? And there's this storm brewing. So there's like this physical external conflict while Tully's going through all this internal stuff. I just actually had my book launch at Parnassus Books here in Nashville, and I had an Olympic gold medal swimmer join me. Yes, I wore her medal. She let me wear her gold medal the entire time. And all my kids got to try it on. So that alone is a win. But one thing that
Who was it? Like, you have to tell us who it was.
Her name is Ashley Whitney, and she won a gold in swimming in the 1996 Olympics. And now we're friends, and we're going to meet up at the park and go for a walk.
Oh my gosh, books are amazing. They just bring people together.
It's so random and funny. And so one thing she told me was the thing about swimming and the thing about being in the water, and I already knew this from my research and just from my own experience, is that you're in your head because that's all you have. It's you and the water and your thoughts. And so that was a really interesting thing for me to explore with Tully.
Oh my gosh, that is just amazing. So a couple of things I kind of jotted down as you were talking. So the Godfather swim is a real thing.
Yes. Oh yeah.
And how did you find out about this? Like, are you a swimmer in your own life?
Oh my gosh. I wish you could have heard our conversation at Parnassus. I think they recorded it, but I'm so scared of swimming in the water. I'm scared of not being able to see my feet and what's down there. And Ashley spent the entire conversation convincing me that she was going to get me in the water and make me love it.
For a walk. She's totally gonna like kidnap you and bring you to the water.
She's gonna like drag me into the lake that we're walking around because we are walking around a lake. If you don't hear from me again, it's Ashley's fault. Okay. A couple of things happened at once. I was toying with the idea of doing a book in verse and also wanting to challenge myself with pace, like pacing of stories, because I'm really good at telling stories that have a lot of heart. But I wanted, because apparently I wanted to double challenge myself, I wanted to do this book in verse and I wanted to make it feel fast. Like I wanted to do a plot that felt intense because I normally don't do that. And so then my kids were watching these YouTube videos of this boy who was an open water swimmer and he chronicled his swims. And the one that I saw that made me fall for it was he actually swam from San Francisco shore to Alcatraz and back, and which is another swim that appears in the book. And his family follows on a boat behind him. And he talks about like how like he kind of found his identity in swimming and it's become his love. And I could not get this image out of my head of this person swimming alone in the water. I mean, you have people there, but really not, because they can't, you can't hear them. You can't, you know, you can't legally, if you're going to qualify and do the swim, you can't even touch them. You're not allowed to touch your support crew because it's cheating. And so I couldn't get that idea out of my head. And it's like those two pieces click together, the pace, this story, I guess three pieces, and then the poetry aspect, and it all just kind of came together.
Well, and I have to tell all of the listeners and you that I did read this recently. And I've always said, Jamie and I know, have known each other for a while, like since you started writing books, I feel like, first through Book Posse, because I'm a member of Book Posse. That's kind of where we started to know one another.
Before I left Twitter. Jump ship, no pun intended.
So appropriate. And then we just stayed in touch. And now in this Facebook group, I see a lot of your posts. And then I got to see you in real life in DC at ALA last summer? Or was it two summers ago?
It was last summer, and it feels a million years ago. Wait.
Well, DC was 2 years ago. Were you in Chicago?
I was at DC, and then I wasn't in Chicago. Okay,
then it was 2 years ago, and I got to see you, and we have a photo somewhere in my phone, and I was
so
excited.
You need to come to San Diego this summer. I'm going to be there.
I already got my, so we'll connect, and maybe we can do a little recording of like a little teaser for something when we're there. Oh, that'd be so much fun. So I followed you since you became a middle grade author, and I've always said, Jamie Sumner books, I literally read in one sitting. And I'm not lying when I say that. That is real. Like, that is absolutely true. And this Deep Water was exactly the same. And I'm always so sad when it ends. But it was just such a powerful story. And I was really on that journey with Tully the whole time that she was in the water and all of the emotions she went through and her internal thinking. And when you said that when the Olympic swimmer talked about how that's all you have, I think you really did a great job conveying that, because I was in Tully's head the whole journey. So I can't wait for other readers to actually have a chance to read the story. And at the very end, your acknowledgments, they were in verse, which I don't think I've ever seen. And I think that was so cool, because I read a lot of novels in verse, and I have a lot of favorite authors who write novels in verse. And unless I've missed it, I have never seen any of them write their acknowledgments in verse. And there's two people you shout out that I know. Chris Barron, who was on the podcast last year for the novels in verse series we did in April. I was able to do four episodes that month for a variety of reasons. And I have just followed him also since he really became an author, and he's just a wonderful human being and an amazing writer. And you talk about him kind of giving you the confidence to write verses in shape. And there are two for sure. I know there's a bell and there's a lightning strike. There's four. Oh my gosh, I need to go back, because I only wrote down the two that I vividly remembered. So talk a little bit about that process where you're writing the novel or the verse in actually the shape of what you're talking about.
So first of all, I don't think anyone has done acknowledgments in like couplets like I did. I was like, well, if I'm breaking the rules, I might as well just break them all. And so I just decided to do it like that. And as far as the shape poems go, I had one or two already in there when he read it. And one of the things he said to me was, I love the shape poem. Kids love shape poems. And because I love him and respect him so much, because we were debut authors together. So we came out, we were in a Facebook group together. Our books came out together. And then he and I were at, I think, NCTE in the fall together, and got to see each other face to face for the first time that first year in 2019, I guess. And so I really respect him. And I loved, what's it called? Love That Dog. Is that what it's called?
Oh, by Sharon Creech. Yep.
Yes. Yep. And she has, of course, the shape poem of the dog. And I just fell in love with that because that's in the book. And so I'm like, okay, again, you got to lean into the signs. I'm like, I loved that book. It was one of my favorites. Chris says kids love these. I love making them. And so I had waves in there. There's a shape poem in the form of waves. And then I had, I believe, the raindrop, the big, huge raindrop. So I went back and I'm like, I want more. And I thought my editor was going to kill me because they are the hardest poems to format you've ever imagined. Like, that took us longer, I think, than editing the entire manuscript, was going back and making them exactly perfect when you have to page set them. So then I went back and added the lightning and the bell. So those are the four in there. And I've never had so much fun. And I felt so bad for the copy editors and the page proofers. But you know what? They're fun. And the kids love them. They really do.
They're
really hard to make.
I can't even imagine because you have to have all the right words and what you're trying to convey through the words and then through the image. I do think, though, this would be a really cool book for classroom teachers or librarians who do lessons within poetry. This is such a great model, like a mentor text to take and start and build on what they see you do and then try to make their own. So I think that was something that I actually thought of in my teacher brain as I was reading the book. I thought it was so
cool. Well, and I used to be a teacher. I taught high school English for 10 years, and I taught creative writing as well as an independent study. And it's exactly something I would do with my students.
That's
awesome. I didn't at the time. I wish I had, but it's something I would love to have done with them because they would have loved it.
Seriously. Yeah. It's just so creative and it's fun. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you and Chris were debut authors together, and something that from my experience being in the kid lit world for quite a few years, first as a teacher, now as a librarian, and just as like a super book nerd overall, it's such an amazing close-knit community. Mm-hmm. And in your acknowledgments, you also mention Lisa Phipps, who is the author Starfish, and I just recently finished her book that's coming out in May, and then
I haven't read it yet, and I'm so mad.
Oh my gosh, I could possibly share my copy with you if you want me to send it to you.
I should ask Lisa or just
it is on NetGalley too, if you're a member of NetGalley, but I would be happy to share that with you. So we can talk offline for that. Mm-hmm. But one of the questions that I wrote down when I was thinking about what I wanted to talk to you about is, how have these friendships and others within the KidLit community helped you on your journey as a writer and as a person? Because I feel like those connections really change us for the better overall.
They really do. Okay, first of all, writing is such an isolated craft. I do it alone. I don't have a writing group that I meet with. I never have. You know, you're crafting a whole story in your own brain. You're literally living in your head. And then of course, when the book comes out, that all flip-flops and everything is external and you're having to like vocalize and talk about it and ask people to share things and do all this stuff that's the polar opposite of what you've been doing and what you're like probably naturally drawn to do as an artist. But the great thing about finding other people like you is that they immediately get it. Like, Lisa gets it. We all get that feeling of we finish a book and we're not sure there is another one in us. Or we're stuck and we're not sure, is this not even going to be a good book? Do I keep going or do I quit? Or I lost this character's voice. How do I find it again? And we get it. We get that. And Lisa in particular, it's so funny. We've never actually met. In real life. But we have become so close because she and I are so similar in our personalities. I can call her. I can text her. I've literally gone on a walk with my dog in the woods and talked to Lisa for an hour, just back and forth, like sharing encouragement, sharing personal stuff. And you leave that and you feel like you are in a community even when you're literally alone in the woods. Me and the dog but also Lisa, you know?
Right.
So it really is necessary. It's absolutely necessary. I can tell my husband all day long, I'm stressed about this, or I don't know how I'm going to wrap this plot point up, or this is a good climax. And he's going to be like, oh, I'm so sorry. You'll figure it out or blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't get it like emotionally, and other author friends do without having to try to explain it to them. So It's really important. It's why teachers need each other. You know, it's why I look at me flipping back into teacher mode.
Once a teacher, always a teacher. That does not ever go away.
At least once a week, I dream that I'm a teacher again and I'm back in my old classroom. It's so weird. But it's why you have, you know, the teacher workroom that you can like take a load off and just kind of be yourself in away from the kids and everything.
Well, and it also makes me feel like when COVID was happening and we were all in this lockdown, social media really became like this third space for mm-hmm. all of us. And it kept us connected in ways that I don't know how I personally would have survived without mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And I just really solidified some bonds that I had. Really, like you said, like you've never met Lisa in real life, but you are very connected. And I would love to be there the first time you ever see each other. Is she coming to ALA?
I'm going
to
die. No, I don't
you
know.
You need to find this out.
I'm going to TLA next week. And she won't be there because her book won't be out yet. But I have to ask her if she's coming to ALA.
Yes. And please let me in on that little partay. If she is. Oh, my gosh. It would be awesome. I would love to like talk to the both of you together. That would be epic. but yeah, because I have a couple really amazing librarian friends in other states. And really social media is how we stayed in touch, even if we met in real life first. But I have a lot of people who I never met in real life first. And I'm literally like in the exhibit hall or in a session at a conference. And I look at somebody, I'm like, they look really familiar. And then I'll go to my social media. I'm like, OMG, it's so-and-so from Twitter or from Instagram or from yeah, Facebook. Right. And I go up to them and it's like an immediate connection. It's just, it's so important to kind of have those connections with people who do get it, because our families, we don't want to live without them ever, but it is a different conversation when you're with people that are in that little inner circle of what your brain is thinking in professional mode, right? Like it just is, even talking to you, it just is so filling and joyful. Like it just, I'm very glad that you have some of those relationships with.
I mean, it's empathy versus sympathy. The people around you can have a lot of sympathy, but the people who've lived it have that empathy that you don't even have to explain.
So true. So true. And going back a little bit to your family. So Jody is who Deepwater is dedicated to. And I, as a reader, always read the dedications and I always have questions. And there's a really cool YouTube channel that I would have to look up, but it's two authors, I feel like, who interview different authors and have them tell their dedication stories.
That's a good idea.
I'll have to look that up and put that in the show notes because I can't remember off the top of my head who is doing that. But tell us a little bit about who Jody is and why you dedicated it to him.
If you can think of two like polar opposite jobs. So Jody works in tech, IT for a healthcare company. He's actually like in charge of the tech IT department, but like, and then I write books. I mean, and when he met me, I was a teacher. Like there's just totally different skill sets, but we connected for sure based on our nerdiness, like legitimate, hardcore nerds. Like I'm sending him a link to a New York Times article. He's sending me a link to the recent NPR, whatever. And we're making fun of grammar things. And it's just, and we connected over music. Like I remember one of our very first, like, you know how when you're first dating someone and you go on a date that can just last all day because you're a baby and you don't have commitments. And so we went on this date and it was like, we went to the park, we had a picnic. He like brought a kite that he had just bought and he traveled to China and he bought this huge kite and it was way too big and he couldn't fly it because he couldn't run fast enough to lift this giant kite. I just remember that. And then we went to a baseball game and we went and got tacos and sat outside and he made this playlist later called the Sunshine Playlist because we dubbed that day like our Sunshine Day because we had, and I still to this day, we've been married, oh geez, long enough for me to forget, 16 years. I still to this day listen to that playlist because we connected on a music level too. But anyway, so this, and I can't imagine anyone else parenting the children that we have other than him. Like Charlie is amazing, and we have been through the ringer with him as far as health scares, ambulance rides, long hospital stays, fear for his future, kind of. Then we had twins, and I had three non-mobile children under the age of two or under the age of three. And Jody has been my constant through all that. And when I was thinking of the dad that Tully would need, that maybe she wouldn't feel super connected with until the absence of her very dynamic mother brought her father kind of out of the shadows and into the light a little bit, I couldn't help but kind of write Jody. I think he would absolutely be the kind of dad who would do the bubble test with our kids. He took them to see the eclipse this past Monday because he was not okay that it was only going to be a partial eclipse where we were. So he took them out of school. I stayed because my book was coming out Tuesday and we wanted Charlie to go to school and somebody had to meet him when he got off the bus. He took our twins. He drove from Nashville to Illinois and to see the eclipse. And they called me from a Pilot gas station and we all watched together. And I'm pretty sure I saw almost the same thing they did, but I'm not going to point that out. And then he took them to the Metropolis Museum because there's a city based on the Superman's Metropolis. I told him he bought me a Wonder Woman shirt and he brought it back. But listen, it took them 3 hours to get there and 7 hours to get home because of eclipse traffic. Okay.
That's some dedication.
I'm on the phone with them doing triage over the phone with our children. But you know what? He's like, it was worth it. It was worth it. And that's just the kind of person he is. I'd be crawling out the window probably. So that's why the book is dedicated to him. And I can't believe I made it to book 7 and hadn't dedicated a book to him.
Well, that is an amazing story. And yeah. I agree with you saying how Tully's dad, the way you described Jody is how I felt about Tully's dad mm-hmm. throughout the whole thing. I mean, it's a long time until he figures out what's going on. And then like all the stuff starts to happen and both the external, like you said, issues with the storm and her internal, but he is just there to the very end for her and makes it okay. Like, mm-hmm. you know, so that is so amazing. And then kind of starting to wrap up a little bit. I could literally talk to you for like an hour.
I know. I'm so chatty.
So am I, but it's not bad. It's not a bad thing. But one of the things that when I was looking up some information and just kind of preparing for our talk, I looked at your webpage. It has a whole bunch of your links to the articles you've written. You've written mm-hmm. so many articles. So for the listeners, they need to check some of them out. They're so amazing. And some people probably don't know, you've also written a couple of books for adults that mm-hmm. I think would be highly interesting to some of our readers out there. And I'll link all of those in our show notes so you'll be able to see what those are. But I was scrolling down your list of articles and OMG, it popped out. It was your crossword puzzles, the 6 love language. And I love crossword puzzles. I have loved crossword puzzles. I'm a super word nerd. I always have been. But 2 weeks ago when I was on a vacation in New Jersey with my boyfriend, I found an amazing book at a used bookstore. It's called Wordplay. Have you ever heard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
have you seen the documentary?
No.
Okay, so I read the book because the book goes with the documentary, which I had never heard of either. And so, of course, I bought the documentary on Amazon because I couldn't find it really anywhere digitally for very cheap. So I'm like, I'm just going to own it because I'm totally going to have a viewing party with my nerdy friends at some point. So like crossword puzzles have been in the forefront, and I even have started planning an episode all about crossword puzzles for future. So I read this article and I was just like, this is meant to be. You are meant to be my first person back after the year. So tell the audience a little bit about what crossword puzzles meant to you and Jody back in the day.
So, okay. Wow. I don't even know how to make this short. So I've actually written 3 New York Times articles for on crossword puzzles for the crossword puzzle for the puzzle section of the New York Times. I've written three essays. The first one was about doing crossword puzzles in the NICU when Charlie was in the NICU, and the comfort that that brought me, the steady solvability of something. And then I wrote, well, and then I'll just skip to the, so Jody's, he worked, his degree randomly is in geographic mapping. So before he got into like healthcare tech, he was doing geographic mapping and his company had a contract with EPA. And so they would send him to all these disaster sites. Okay. When I first met him, he was doing cleanup for Katrina. So he would be gone 2 weeks, home 1 week. And then later he was cleaning up the oil spill in Biloxi and all these other places. Anyway, all that to say, he would travel and he would clip cut the crossword puzzles out of the various free papers he would get in the hotels and mail them to me blank. Because he knew how much our, like one of our routine dates was every Saturday we would go to a coffee shop cafe called Sam and Zoe's, and we would get breakfast and we would do the crossword puzzle. And he would have to sit on the left side of me and I would sit on his right because he's right-handed and I'm left-handed and it just worked perfect. And that's kind of what we did. And so when he would travel and not be here, he would mail them. And so one day I was cleaning out our cabinet that had all the million sippy cups with unmatched lids when our kids were older. And I found a huge stack. Like I actually still can see them. I'm staring at them because I've kept them and not filled them out because now they're a souvenir. But I found a huge stack that of all, and they all had the dates on them of when he had sent them because it was the paper. And it's become like this record. And I just have always loved puzzles. I do Wordle every day. And I do the mini crossword every day. And I'm really close friends with the editor of the New York Times crossword since I've written three articles for her. And we stay in touch and we message each other. So yeah, it is no small thing in my life.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think you're going to make another appearance in another episode when I get this crossword puzzle episode.
I'll be a pop out. Yeah.
Oh, that would be so amazing. Oh my God. That I was just, when I saw that one article, I'm like, this is just, again, meant
to be. Yeah. In the article, for people who haven't read it, it shares snippets of the different times and what was going on in our lives when he sent the different crossword puzzles. So it's like, it's almost like, I guess it's a little bit like kind of like my book in verse where it's little snapshots of time pieced together.
It's like a memory book. It's like your scrapbook. So I'm just going to plant this little seed. I feel like one of your books has to include something with crossword puzzles in the future. Like
One kid's what? Trash. He got in trouble because he created an entire crossword puzzle that was a bully, like back at you punch to the kid who had been bullying him.
I and do the not answers remember to that.
All the clues were like this kid's name.
Yes, I think that's awesome. So we have to end. I'm so sad we have to end. But I have one question that I ask every guest that comes on the podcast because it is a joyful learning podcast. And I would just like to know, is there anything specifically in your life right now that's bringing you just a lot of joy?
I'm like sifting through all the things. It's funny because you're asking me on book launch week, which is so like, it is a whole lot of like good stuff, but also stress. And so I'm kind of shifting through. This is so silly, but I'm just going to say it. We had fallen off the rails in our family with family dinner because Jody was getting home late for work and the kids have soccer and Charlie has horseback riding therapy. And we had just, it'd been a long time since we'd actually made time to all sit down and eat together. And a couple weeks ago, Jonas, my son, who's Cora's, the twin, Jonas and Cora, leaned over and whispered to me, "I miss family dinner because I miss our weird conversations." And that was enough for me to be like, all right, family, we are doing it.
It's coming back.
Well, if we have to eat at 8, 9 o'clock, we're going to do it. And so I brought back family dinners a couple weeks ago, I guess, right after he said that. And it has been such a joy to just sit down and have that time. And I'm not a dummy. I know that it'll be max one or two times a week that we can actually pull it off. Every Sunday night, we do family movie night and we get takeout and we watch a movie, but that's different. This is like we're actually having conversations face to face. And it's so funny and silly, but it means so much to me to have that time because they're going to be gone one day.
Right. It's limited. Right. And no, I think that's the perfect answer. And I'm so glad you said that. And just like you said, it can happen every day, but mm-hmm. you don't not do something because you can't do it all the time.
Exactly. Like which would be my personality. I'd be like, forget it. We can't do it. Never doing it.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Jamie. This has been such a joyful conversation, and I am so excited for all of our readers to hear it and for them to get deep water. It'll be out by the time this episode is live, and just all of your books have touched me in some way, and I know all the readers that have read them. So please keep them coming. I'm very excited to see the new ones that you have coming out in the future. So
thank you. Thank you for all your support over the years. You teachers are why I do this and why the kids get the books, because you care and you get it to them. And that's a big deal.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And just last closing, just let all our listeners know where they can find you on social media so they can follow you and see all of the amazing things you continue to do.
Oh yeah. So my website is jamie-sumner.com. And then I'm on mostly just Instagram. It's Jamie Sumner underscore author. And I'm also in that Facebook group for the
which
love
is awesome.
Of middle grade.
Yes. So, oh my gosh. Everybody who's a middle grade fan needs to be part mm-hmm. of that group. So mm-hmm. I will put all of your links in our show notes and I'll add that Facebook group. And I hope you have an amazing launch week and have so much fun at TLA next week. I am very jealous that I am not going to be there. So have a great time, and I will see you in ALA in San Diego in June.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, as always, for tuning in to the Joyful Learning Podcast. Please follow our podcast and our social media accounts. And we would be greatly appreciative for anybody who really is connecting with the show to rate us on whatever platform you find your podcast and leave a review if you feel so inclined.